publicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you be in the world. This is Ralph Kermit Winterroad II with the Ralph Winterroad Show, coming to you live out of Alaska. We're about five above here today. We're having a heat wave again. Well, we've had a little bit of nippy weather this early in the year, but you never know. Tis Alaska. So I hope everybody has been pounding on the Attorney General's at Mike Lindell's webpage to keep the heat up on these suckers down there. I can't. How does one not? I mean, I put it out to them. Do you not want fair elections where one vote counts for the person that you vote for? How can they be against that? There's something really wrong with a whole ton of these politicians, what we call politicians and other people in this country. You just can't make this stuff up. I mean, that if we have, we are these people that, by the way, I had this guy that was calling in with this sovereign nonsense of international, the statutes don't apply and all that other junk. I want to watch out for these people. There's a lot of people out there that's feeding a lot of nonsense to people. And they get people in trouble and get them pointed off in the wrong direction instead of staying with facts that they could back up. A lot of agent provocateurs out there. Anyways, sorry for that. I was really... condolences go out for Kentucky. 94 dead in a tornado. And I'm telling you what, I grew up in southeast Kansas. Grade school gone. Our high school was blown away. The church. I've been around when everything just gets really quiet. And you look up and the clouds are rolling and you see a tornado off in the distance or see one up close, which I have. That's the one thing that I do not miss from being away from Kansas is tornadoes. We have earthquakes in Alaska. I happen to be, I remember it was this year or last year, but I think it was this year, we had a 7 point something earthquake and the epicenter was almost under my house. I have a 2x12s with foam, and I was up here holding on to the, I have a 55-inch screen. I was holding on to it, and I was seeing my 2x12s twist, and I thought, oh my gosh. And it went on for about a minute. It's the only time I've ever actually been somewhat concerned of an earthquake, because I've seen a lot of them, been around a lot of them, and they rock and roll and shake the house and shake the bed. And usually, though, they're down around on the Aleutian chain somewhere. Occasionally, they're up around Anchorage or someplace up there, but they still, there's no big deal. You know, they last for 30 seconds or maybe a minute. But boy, this one here was a hoopla. It tore up some of the pavement right down the road from where I am. But I do not ever want to be around tornadoes. Oh, God. Those things come at night, and a lot of times, and our house had actually been moved prior to us moving into it when I was little from a tornado. When we were in Tornado Alley in southeast Kansas, we used to go around and look at different tornadoes, you know, the damage that they did. When I lived back in southeast Kansas, because that was Wichita and Pittsburgh, and oh God, I'm telling you, the things that you can just can't believe what tornadoes can do. Go down the street and tear up one side and the other side's there, or like our grade school, you go by, there's no walls, and here is the desk with books sitting on it, on top of a floor with no walls. How does this happen? It's pretty amazing to see what tornadoes can do. Like I say, I do not miss those puppies at all. No way. I'll take an earthquake any day of the week, even though I've only had one up here that's really got my attention. Because I have all kinds of rows of books, and I have in the upper part of the house here, it's not finished, and I had to get down and crawl out on my belly because all these bookcases and books were, oh God, what a mess. I don't know how many I got, probably 20 up here full of books all over the floor, but still better than a tornado, man. If you've ever been around what those things can do, I tell you, it's a scary proposition. Well, our petition for rehearing in the Supreme Court of the United States still hasn't been, they've started ruling on, they had it in a conference December the 10th. So that's 2 days ago. They haven't put out on their homepage or in Westlaw, although there have been ruling on some of them. But the one Mooney put in has it. It does have evidence. Judicially noticed that the Supreme Court is bound to take notice of, and did plead it correctly, because it's not arbitrary capricious. It's the 706, I think it's 2D, it's 2 or 1, I think it's 2, but it's D anyway. They didn't follow procedure. And I'm going to look here for a case when I get a break here. I found, somebody sent me a case, and I looked at it. It's the history of the tax court. And in this, they bring up 301 regs, and nobody, they just gloss over it. It's just amazing. I don't know how this, the stuff that's going on, I'm telling you, it just shocks the conscience. All this COVID-19 nonsense. I've got three David Martin videos that I copied, and I've got two of them turned into transcripts I'll be posting soon. And there's absolutely, which there shouldn't have been way before now, but there's absolutely no no doubt, David Martin is just an amazing man. He said he's got 4,100 patents related to this. And COVID-19 doesn't exist. There are different symptoms that they think they can apply to it, and the, quote, COVID test is a total crock. Doesn't prove that you have, quote, COVID-19. I forget what he called it. I'll have to go back and look at the text of it. It's just amazing. And the people that are dying from taking this stuff and getting sick from it. I was in at the getting some coffee. I like to buy Kona coffee, Hawaiian coffee. It's a little more expensive, but it doesn't bother my stomach. And those people were talking about the people that had had the shots that knew somebody that had had bad effects from taking the COVID jab, the bioweapon. It's not a vaccine at all. And it's just, of course, when you are inundated with propaganda from all of these TV and the, I don't even listen to the radio station. I'm so tired of listening to this, take your shot and be a patriot and all this other nonsense. I'm not going to put up with it. Just irritates me and pisses me off, quite frankly, that we got this many people that are still buying in to this and these, quote, what we call a government, is putting this out to kill Americans and maim Americans. And people are getting rich doing it. Fauci has, he's got patents, and Barrick and some of these other people, they've got patents on some of this stuff. And they're making millions, if not billions of dollars, these pharmaceutical companies, knowingly now, putting out something that is most definitely a bioweapon. Do I think these politicians are getting the real thing? No, they're getting saline or some other nonsense. It wouldn't be so bad if we could at least include them, and the ones that are getting the real good stuff might be one way to clean house. Terrible thing to say. But there are so many other people that are stupid? If they're ignorant, they would at least listen. And you bring up the real issue, they have no interest. They have a belief system. And by golly, you're not going to penetrate that belief system. I think Mark Twain said that probably the biggest thing is what we think we know that's not so. That's paraphrased. That's one of the major problems with people. They think they know something, and you ask them the question, and they don't have an answer. Has it ever been isolated? Well, of course. Where? Well, I don't know. Do you know what's in this shot? No. Have you ever seen what's in it? No. Do you know it's experimental? Yeah, I've heard that. But it's got to be safe, or otherwise they wouldn't be putting it out there. Oh, you betcha. Mm-hmm. Step up and take your death shot. I just find it absolutely astounding. And this whole thing that I've been researching out about the administrative legislation is what it's called. Congress does not make laws of the United States. That ceased to exist around the turn of the century, and by 1936, they were making something called public laws. And those are not laws of the United States. And in what they were doing is good old Franklin Delano Roosevelt, God, he loved Mussolini and his nationalizations type nonsense, and we got this New Deal going. Humphrey, I think it was either 33 or 34, the last day in office, he repeals 1,006 statutes, and FDR comes in with this new deal that he starts off with his administrative nonsense, says it's law, that's so out of control. It's just beyond belief. So they had to do the Federal Register Act in 1935. And it's just amazing how you know that the 1935 Federal Register Act, the whole complete act, was put in the Federal Register twice, which means you have to take judicial notice of the whole thing. And the codification of the Federal Register Act in total does not exist today. They have some of it in Title 44, and it's under proposed legislation, and only part of it's there. What's that tell you? They don't want us to know. We have two things going. We have a complete government that's been overthrown. That's an absolute fact. And if it's done in so many ways, the National Voter Registration Act, there's only federal offices. Only citizens of the United States can vote. They have no political power at all. All they have are civil rights. They don't have political rights. The right of the elective franchise, the right of suffrage, does not exist for a citizen of the United States as they use it, defined. 14 Stat 27. And I don't understand. You would think somehow at some point people would start to understand this. I put it out in briefs. I have an IRS list. If you can't afford it, it's free. It's IRS at AlaskaMinuteman.com. It's $250 any type of money I can take now, because Walmart, when that brief was filed on Mooney's, Walmart, they just went after me big time. Four different people tried sending money different times. They wouldn't tell us why. They stole $500 out of my debit account. Took them 6 weeks to get that, and a lot of me turning them into the Federal Reserve to get these people to move, the Green Dot Bank. They just lied. And then, oh, you got a replacement card. Just over and over, Walmart lied to me. That's what happens when you go up against these people that are in power that don't want this stuff out. That's fine. It's no big deal. Minor issue. But the things that I have discovered since then, but the Supreme Court brief is on point. The petition for rehearing cites the Federal Register publications that Congress says are to be judicially noticed, which is like DNA. There's no other evidence required. It's a public record. They can't get around it. It's their confession. Now, this is sitting in the Supreme Court of the United States in the petition for rehearing. And what subjects does it cover? I'm working on putting these modules together so I can help people with their Social Security and all that. I haven't quite got it all done yet, because more stuff just keeps coming in every day from somewhere or somehow. But it goes into, you have to have a notice of deficiency. That's like somebody sending you a bill. And they're Part 301 regs. And what does that mean? It's just amazing that this is not known. They print it. But when people go to tax court, they usually almost invariably use statutes. The statutes aren't really laws of the United States, but you cannot win against an agency with statutes. Why can't you win? This is so important. The reason being is because they do not live in the Constitution of the United States. They're external. They even say in this, I'll find this case, that the tax court is external. Tax court is. It's in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9. It's a legislative court. and the United States District Court that was replaced the true District Court of the United States in 1948, it's an Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9. Why is that important? These are absolutely just critical issues. It's not understood, and it's not briefed. I went to great detail in the Mooney case. There's a, I don't know, way over 100-page complaint with a 998-page PDF document tracing the overthrow of our constitutional courts and stuff. It's all right there. It's like a book. But it just keeps getting better. But the thing that people say, I keep hearing this question come in email. Well, where does it say they can't use code? Well, okay, the document, Senate document number 248, was cited 71 times in court cases that is not in Westlaw. McCarran, which was the guy that was, he was a House of Representatives. He was really knowledgeable. He put this all together. And in there, I found two sets of two words that are really important. One is they call it administrative legislation, and that's what it is. Because we have congressional legislation, which we think are laws of the United States, even though they aren't, and then we have administrative legislation. They're totally separate. And what Congress does, this concept is so needs to be understood. What Congress does, and they have to invite in these federal agencies to, quote, make administrative legislation. And it's supposed to be very limited. Because otherwise, that gives, which they said, Scalia, Supreme Court cases, several others, I don't know why they didn't like him. He says Congress can't delegate legislative power. Constitution says so. He said they can delegate policy. Well, policy is not law. This is Scalia. I know why they had to get rid of him. I read a couple of his cases. He was too much on point. We can't have somebody that actually reads the Constitution and says, you know, we probably ought to just follow what it does. But Congress invites in these foreign, most of them are outside the Constitution, called federal agencies or agencies. All of anything that's out in the, quote, administrative state. Congress has to empower them by an invitation. Would you like to come in and screw these people that think they are, quote, citizens of the United States, end quote, that have no political rights, they have no inalienable rights, which is nature's God, the law of nature, nature's God. They don't have that. We made up a fictional status for them called a citizen of the United States, and we're just going to give them civil rights. Oh, it's just so important to have civil rights so you can sue and be sued. Babcock and many of the other cases, Supreme Court cases, started off with Hayburn, clear back, I think it was 1798. Anytime you create rights against itself, so if you create rights against the United States, rights against a state, it's called a benefit. And they've ruled over and over and over. Anytime you take the benefit, shut the heck up. Because whatever is offered as a remedy, or what is withheld as a remedy, you have no recourse because you took the benefit. This is where, I mean, I don't know, you just do the simple logic. How can Congress say, like with Internal Revenue, we have to pay off all the amount and then we can go to an administrative court. Administrative court. Now they called, I'm going to get this case looked up here before I find it here. That's called a court of law. But they play games. These lawyers do. They say a tax court, quote, has judicial power of the United States. It's not in quotation marks. Then you will see them, they say it has judicial power, in quotation marks, of the United States, not included. Now, what does that mean? This is so important. This is why I put judicial power of the United States always in quotation marks, because they can't address it. We put it in quotation marks, they'll walk around it because they can never touch it. Is it true that quotation marks, judicial power in quotation marks of the United States can be exercised by an administrative entity? Absolutely true. Why? Because there are some issues that are administrative, and it's not. And here's the card that they get us around, and it's called public rights. Public rights. Now, what public rights are is something that applies to a whole class of people. And that class happens to be the, quote, citizens of the United States, end quote. That is the public rights doctrine, which they just started off with, and they just say income taxes under that, because it applies to everybody. And why does it apply to everybody? Because we volunteered for it, because we don't know no better. Now, I found, and I got to do a module on this, Congress may not offer money for a state or individuals to do something that is unconstitutional. Why is that important? Because I found also another case, I'm still working on the module on that, Congress can constitutionally offer an incentive to states or individuals to do something. But I also found Congress cannot force a state or coerce, like blackmail, or an individual to do something. But they do that all the time. And nobody brings it up. Stop and think about it. They can't force you to do a national income tax, which is a voluntary system. This is when they were going after Trump, that nasty attorney general in New York going after Trump. The House of Representatives, Ways and Means, said it is a voluntary national taxation system. Okay, I want to know, how can a voluntary national voting or a taxation system deprive me of my life, liberty, and property? Because I don't know what, I am of the opinion that it's law. You ask most people about regulation, they'll say, well, that's the law. Just like this case where they brought up the 301 regs. Nobody challenges that it is a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Okay, well, we're back here. And this is a really interesting case. Southern District of Columbia, 2014. It's K-U-R-E-T-S-K-I. K-U-R-E-T-S-K-I. And it's 755 F as in Frank, period 3D, space 929. 755 F, period 3D, 929. It gives a great history of the tax court, how it goes into it's an Article 1 court. They made it finally that, an Article 1 court. Article 1, Section 8. It's a tribunal, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9. What are those type of courts? Why is it not under Article 3? Because they say that is public rights. It applies to everybody. It's under public rights. So it doesn't apply to you, quote, individually. So if you are of a status of that class, you're screwed. But I also got Supreme Court case now. I'm looking on that. That if they cannot discriminate from one class to another class. So if I am a citizen of Alaska, that's in the public record in my status, which is self-authenticating, Evidence Rule 901, Number 7, they can't discriminate. Well, wait a minute, I'm not of that class. They're discriminating. And then we can even go back to the Public Salary Act, where they got around, and there's no law, they admit it, because the state said, hey, we will pay federal income tax on our state people if you will do reciprocal the other way. The feds said, oh, yeah, well, so we'll get around and we'll tax the folks on either side of the jurisdictions. I got to finish up a module on that. Is there a law? But you're never going to win using code. And in this one, they actually had, let's see, I'm going to search here, where they had 301, they brought up a 301 code here, 26 CFR, 301-6655. And they didn't do anything with it. And they brought up 301-7122. 301-6651. I'm going to write those two down, look them up, because I'll bet they're probably both in my 706 list. 651, and the other one is 7122. Nobody brings up that they're nonsense. It is a 26 CFR, Code of Federal Regulations. 301 is a part 301, which in Chrysler V. Brown says absolutely positively, this is 5 U.S.C. 301, departmental rules, period. They label them housekeeping regulations, internal. No application to you or me. And this case, they just go right over it. They just, as though it has a law, as though it's really the thing. And they actually talk about they found an error in this thing. How can nobody catch on to this? How? You can't get into tax court unless you have it. The IRS has to come out and say, Ralph, you owe us money. Do they use 301, 62, 11, or 12? No. They use the code. Go on the home page of the IRS and see if you can find 301 regulations. See if you can find subsidy regulations, which is in their only world they're supposed to operate in, administrative legislation. Why is it not there? Why is Congress, by the way, Congress, it's unconstitutional for Congress to do a taxpayer bill of rights. Do they not know that these regulations are promulgated under 301 regs? You think? Let's see if 6651 is. I'm going to type in 6651 and hit read. See if, oh, amazing. Isn't that amazing? It does exist. There is a 301. Isn't that amazing? Failure to file tax return or pay tax. Housekeeping regulation. And nobody brings it up? Why? It's their stuff. 7122. Table of contents. It's on the closing agreements and compromises. It's all on compromises. That's 301. Why doesn't anybody bring this up? You can't get into tax court, a tribunal, which I have two cases. One's a 1960, one's another 1980 case that has never seen any appellate court till the Moonies brought it up to the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals at the last moment, because I couldn't find it. They'd hidden it real good when I was doing word searches. It got to the Supreme Court, and they denied it, of course, too hot to handle, because that would show that our whole United States District Courts is all a big con. That's too big of a bite out of the apple. But it says in those It's codified in 28 U.S.C. 132C. 28 U.S.C. 132C. Judicial power of a district court. Judicial power is limited strictly to a government. Of a district court. That's the end of the prepositional phrase. District court is not a government. I'll think. Article 3 of the Constitution of the United States says judicial power of the United States, and our founding fathers put it twice in the Constitution of the United States. And it's in Article 3. Let me get around and look up the exact word. I just had a brain flatulation here. But where it says, they get around and establish and ordained. They put it in Article 3 so that we would always have a remedy. But it's for individual rights. It's not for public rights. This is how they skip over us. Oh, well, it's public rights. It's everybody's got to do it. So there's no individual rights in public rights. And they're making this stuff up as they go. So you have to establish that it is an individual right. But the only way to attack these is through their confessions. And it's called administrative legislation that's in this Senate document 248. It's in there twice. And it's also called public participation. Now, just stop and think of the logic between this. And this goes to this COVID-19 nonsense. Congress can't declare it an emergency. The President of the United States can. Now, Congress says, oh, we will get around and we will pass over to somebody under Homeland Security or HHS. We can go over to the FDA or CDC or somebody over there. They can declare an emergency and they can bypass the administrative legislation. They don't even have to put it in have the forced effect of law. They actually say bypass the APA. And then they declare an emergency. How can Congress, with no power to do it themselves, send it to an external federal agency, and then they say, you don't have to do the administrative legislation, you just put it in the Federal Register, which means nothing other than it has general applicability and legal effect. That's just step one. Who does it apply to? Where is your authority? Oh, we'll just leave all that out. Because we got a bunch of brainwashed people out here, and we got a whole bunch of courts that aren't going to look at this. We got a whole bunch of attorneys that are dumber than a darn rock, and they won't go there if they did know. And we'll pull it off. We'll change the definition of vaccination. I was listening to Dr. Martin. He said also the FDA had changed it. I have not track that down, but the CDC changed the definition just by just doing it. And they call it a mandate. Why does everybody keep using mandates? There is no authority for a mandate. Mandates are strictly only coming from a court with jurisdiction of a judgment or something. It's also under a seizure for his peasants. That's the definition also. We have a dictator. That works. Why does nobody bring up the definition of mandate? Do they not have access to Black's Law or Bouvier's or something? I just sit and scratch my head. And even some of the good hosts, even that are on Mike Lindell stuff, they talk about mandates. They don't look up the word. Why? Words have meanings. Otherwise, how do we communicate? How do we have a rule of law? How do we have contracts if words don't mean something? And this is the thing they're doing. They're doing a word game. Lawyers are really good at that. Twin speak and triple speak. The administrative legislation for all agencies, federal agencies, is limited. It has to be general applicability and legal effect of the words in the Federal Register. If it's not there, you flip them off. Oh, they all publish in the Federal Register. And everything from the kitchen sink to the garbage is there. So the question becomes then, how do I discern if it might have any application to me? And then what's even crazier yet, how can, if it actually is, which I've never seen one yet, and I've looked at probably thousands of them by now, I have never seen one regulation say it is in compliance with a proposed rule and a final rule, which includes notice and comment with the codified section 553 little b, as in maker. I've never seen one yet. Now, stop and think about. See, I like to do comparisons of logic. If it were a law of the United States, it would take the House of Representatives by a majority, Senate by a majority, and Comrade Biden, or a veto, and then a two-thirds vote of those both, to quote, become a law of the United States. Now compare this to what's in the administrative world, called administrative legislation. This is in the Federal Register. Now you think that Congress does a lot of bills. You have no idea the amount of nonsense, because Congress is supposed to be limited. Well, they have a lot of their nonsense they put out, recognizing some holiday and a bunch of other junk. But in the Federal Register, there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of these things of general applicability and legal effect. But so what? Does it, quote, have the force and effect of law? See, they can't say it has law of the United States, because that'd be unconstitutional. And force and effect of law means, if I'm dumb enough to be of a class of a citizen of the United States and sign up for it and don't know any better, I'll bow down and polish their shoes. None of them ever rise under public participation. Now, public participation is supposed to be equal to the House of Representatives and all the debates and stuff and the vote on the record, supposed to be equal to the Senate and all the debates and stuff on the record, and the President of the United States on the record. On the other side, federal agencies supposedly can bind us, and they're called force and effect of law, by this simple little process. They publish it in the Federal Register as a proposed rule, and they have to have notice and comment. They have to say it's in compliance with 553B, which you'll never see one yet. I've never seen one. I'm seeing where they say we're not going to do it, or they'll just leave it out, or we do notice and comment. All of this stuff is all around the merry-go-round, but we will not step up to the one thing. But how does that, in a proposed rule, notice and comment, they come back with a final rule, notice and comment, and they comment, but it, who in the hell gave them the power to adjudicate administrative nonsense? There's no court there. They don't have any relationship to us. So what is their comments on their, what authority does that comment have to do with anything? I don't care what some idiot and flunky thinks. thinks about it. It's irrelevant. That's the process. We're supposed to think that that proposed rule and a final rule with notice and comments, and then 30 days before it, quote, hits. But see, it isn't a law of the United States. Have you ever heard of a law of the United States? Then there is a six-month period that Congress can look at that regulation and say, convene and say, no, we're not doing it. You can't do it. That's the administrative, legislative process. How many people know that? We have a proposed rule, a notice and comment. We have a final rule, notice and comment. Both have to say we're in doing 553B. You've never seen one. Then they have 30 days. They have to say that, too, we're complying with 553D, which is to wait 30 days. And then Congress has 6 months. So something that supposedly, if it ever happened, Congress could say, no, you can't do it. Been 6 months. You can't make this stuff up. If you just look at the logic of it. And I found this Scalia and said, Congress cannot give away its legislative power. All they can do is delegate policy. Policy. Policy is not law. It's what they think they would like to see. Well, I really don't give a rat's rump what they want to see. That's what Scalia was saying. How many people? I'll bet you there are. Down in Juneau, I would be forced if you could find one person down there that could tell me how the administrative, legislative process works at the federal level. Now, why would a state be interested on, and why would they want to know? Why should they know? Because I have the state plans for every state, including Guam and the Marianas and a couple other places out there. The state plans for every one of these states, every one of them. And in there, it covers our driver's licenses. It covers taking the driver's licenses away. It covers garnishment. It covers your Social Security Title IV nonsense. It covers your divorces. It covers adoptions. And there's a whole list of stuff that it covers. But here's the important part. There's not one darn state law in it. Not one. All the state plans are all CFRs. Now, my question to be, that's why I love to go to these LIO meetings. I could, the state plan here that you're deemed to know the law, you're in the legislature. It says right here, every one of them is a CFR, Code of Federal Regulations. Now, my question to you, do you know how the CFRs have application to you and me? Can you tell me? It has to do with divorces, adoptions, child custody, driver's license, garnishment, all that stuff. Can you tell me that? I don't have a clue. They have no idea. And what's crazy is in some of these regulations, in the CFRs, the courts, supposedly are judicial, have to have cooperative agreements with the executive, the child slavers. The child slavers have to have cooperative agreements also with the Department of Law. Why would the court that's supposed to be judicial being having cooperative agreements with the executive side? Because in the administrative state, there is no such thing. It's an illusion. There is no separation of powers. There's no constitution for them to obey. There's no constitution for them. I think that's kind of important. You think? Just stop and think of the logic of some of this. A question. How, sir, you enter into evidence? I have a copy here of the state plan for the state of Alaska. And there's not one state law in here. So, sir, I would like to know you up there sitting in Alaska, which in Alaska we conclusively prove in 1974, these stupid legislators, not stupid, paid off with dumber than a rock, handed over the court system to the Alaska Bar, and the Alaska Bar changed the names of the dang courts and changed the venue. And here's the evidence. Not on the internet, the Alaska Bar puts it out there, how they changed the names. They're proud of it. Now, the other name for the, quote, constitutional side is still in the Alaska Code. So my question's to the legislator, sir, I want to know why in your code it says third district, and over here in the Alaska Bar, they say we're going to rename it called the third judicial district, and it's an administrative state, and these judges are sitting under that power, and every attorney is signed up to be in the administrative state. Now, I want to know, legislative sir, what the heck is going on here? Why is it in the code one way and you have submitted to the Alaska Bar to do it the other way? And this black robe guy up there says if you screw up and bring this up, you have a Rule 5 and a Rule 64 oath that you have to keep your little lips closed. You can't bring it up or I will pull your card and you can't play in my little kangaroo court. Nobody's interested? Not so far. You see how much fun you can have with knowledge with you go to some of these, just you can ask all kinds of questions and embarrass the heck out of them. But nobody's doing it other than me. Why? The information in Alaska, I've got it torn apart so many ways. It's a joke. It's beyond a joke. A first year, somebody that wanted to be a law student could tear the constitution of the state of Alaska apart. To be in the legislature, you got to be an Alaska resident. To be in the executive, you got to be a citizen of the United States and Alaska resident. In the judiciary, you got to be a citizen of the state and of the United States. Three different qualifications for three different parts of the, quote, three separate branches. What a joke. There's no external amendments. Go look at your own state. Are the amendments external, like the Constitution of the United States? Take a look. Alaska's aren't. They call it the Constitution, which they can. That's the name for a corporate charter or for an organic constitution. Organic constitutions have export corporate charter.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762 972-235-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot them an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
This is RBN, the Republic.